You know ID in the D in the L day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the L day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And do you know what's going on here?
Yeah. I'm outside of Seattle's historic Paramount Theater. PAX is happening. It's Bumbershoot weekend. It's beautiful. Husky season starts today. Why? What's going on?
Yeah, none of that matters anymore because the Seahawks just traded for Sheldon Richardson.
Wow!
We're getting a wow in early here.
I had to get a wow in there.
Yeah, so it was pretty evident early in the morning that the Seahawks were up to something because of the fact that they did something that they've never done before, that I, at least in my memory, which is they converted part of Doug Baldwin's salary this season into a bonus that is stretched over several years and creates, I believe, more than $5 million in cap space for them. This in context with the rumors that they were trying to trade Jermaine Kearse and Jeremy Lane to clear their guaranteed salaries, or in Kearse's case, non-guaranteed, but their salaries from the book, suggested the Seahawks were trying to create salary cap space for someone, and it turns out that someone is Sheldon Richardson.
As somebody who they've been rumored to be interested in for quite a long time, I think there was discussion about it during free agency, and they finally are able to make it happen here on the day after the final preseason game.
Yeah, I mean, it made sense in terms of, first off, the Jets looking to move on from Sheldon Richardson, some concerns about apparently his ongoing feud with former Jet Brandon Marshall, and then the fact that, let's be honest, the Jets are tanking this season.
The Jets are bad.
they are tanking.
Christian Hackenbad.
Oh, no.
Did I just coin that term?
I'm sure some Jets fan must have thought of it.
Okay, so do you want to start out by telling us about Sheldon Richardson? What can we expect here?
Yeah, so this is interesting because of the fact that we're going to see him in a different role than he's been used in throughout his NFL career, playing primarily in a 3-4 scheme with the Jets, and then last season, even in that 3-4, being used as an edge rusher and listed as an outside linebacker.
Really?
So he was already going to be transitioning this year to be playing 3 technique at defensive tackle, which in a 4-3 setup, which is what he considers his natural position. That's what he said to reporters in New York. But it kind of makes it a little confusing to compare some of his statistics. But I think the first thing that jumps out to me is the Seahawks haven't had a 3-down defensive tackle since I don't even know. I mean, you know, probably Brandon Mebane played that role at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking through the past few years, no Seahawks defensive tackle played more than 60% of the snaps in the 5 years for which Football Outsiders has snap data. Last year, if you factor out the one game where he was suspended stemming from his arrest several years ago, after that, Sheldon Richardson played 77.5% of the Jets' defensive snaps.
Really?
So this is a huge change, not schematically, but in terms of personnel from what they've been doing, which is they've primarily had, you know, their run-stuffing defensive tackles. Last year, that was Jaron Reed and Ataba Rubin, who Rubin is now apparently on the trade block because Richardson takes his spot as a 3 technique.
And he's going to be taking up a lot of downs.
Yes. And then on third down, they've either brought in different pass rushing defensive tackles, or last year primarily they moved Michael Bennett and Frank Clark inside to defensive tackle on those downs from defensive end. So this is a little different. And, you know, I think he'll probably not play as much as he did in New York. I imagine they'll want to, you know, keep him a little fresher now that he's playing defensive tackle full time. But it does mean that, you know, this is probably a greater increase to the Seahawks depth than, you know, just on paper replacing one defensive tackle with another if they do in fact trade Rubin. So what you're doing now is one of those defensive linemen, Cassius Marsh presumably, is no longer part of your nickel rush package, which will have presumably Avril and Clark outside, Bennett and Richardson inside, which is an embarrassment of riches for sure. I mean, as pointed out by many people on Twitter, including former Seahawks writer Shield Kapadia, 8 of the Seahawks' 11 defensive starters have made a Pro Bowl.
Wow. So the Seahawks finally found themselves a defensive lineman who can do both. And the thinking here is that Sheldon Richardson is not quite a defensive end, right? He's still more prototypically a defensive tackle, but somebody who can get after the quarterback in a way that we didn't see last year from the interior of the line.
Right, and it's interesting because so Richardson's best season by far was 2014 when he was a first-team All-Pro. That was his only Pro Bowl selection. He had 8 sacks that season. Last year, after having 5 sacks in 2015 when he played 12 games due to a different suspension, a drug suspension, last year he had only 1.5 sacks despite playing a lot of this edge rushing role as an outside linebacker. And that is a little disconcerting on paper. But here's the encouraging thing. And again, his role wasn't apples to apples with what the Seahawks defensive tackles were asked to do. But he had 20 hurries last year, which oddly enough is actually more hurries than he had in 2014 when he had the 8 sacks. He had 16.5 that season, according to Football Outsiders charting. Last year is a group, the Seahawks defensive tackles, Reuben, Tony McDaniel, who has previously departed, and Jaron Reed, they combined, all three of them, for 16 hurries all season.
And honestly, getting sacks it's basically just a coincidence. Right.
I mean, it's more than a coincidence, but there is significant regression to the mean in your sack rate if there's, you know, a very unusual ratio of your sacks to hurries.
Yes. And what we would be more interested in is that hurry rate, because it looks like he's somebody who's getting to the quarterback. Look, maybe Michael Bennett finishes it off or Cliff Averill finishes it off. But Sheldon Richardson's going to be somebody who's there applying pressure.
The other aspect of this is, of course, that Richardson is going to have way better talent around him. New York had this terrific, you know, front three in their 3-4 that it also included Leonard Williams, who sort of eclipsed Richardson since they drafted him a couple years ago, and then Muhammad Wilkerson. But what they haven't had is any sort of quality edge rushers. So now all of a sudden you're in a situation where opposing defenses are having to account for Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill first, who had the Seahawks among the leaders in adjusted sack rate last year, and then also try to figure out a way to deal with Sheldon Richardson. So that's what's really, I think, exciting about this trade.
Wow. It reminds me, I was watching the Ohio State-Indiana game yesterday, and they were talking about how Ohio State, on obvious passing downs, rolls out 4 defensive ends, as if that's scary. Now the Seahawks are going to be rolling out 4 pass rushers, 3 of whom have made Pro Bowls in recent memory and are all still relatively fresh because they're not going to have to play every single down. And, I mean, this is like Giants when they're winning the Super Bowl level pass rush, right?
And the other one of whom, Frank Clark, had 10 sacks last season.
Yeah,
he's the non-Pro Bowl.
He's been a Pro Bowler. So the thing that I think is most interesting about this, though, is I think it's not just something to get to the quarterback, right? I mean, it is that. But it also, I think, relieves some of the pressure, especially with the talk about Jeremy Lane. I'm not sure where that's at right now. But it relieves some of the pressure in the Seahawks secondary, right? Because when the Seahawks are getting to the quarterback, all of a sudden, those corners don't have to defend for as long. And if they do all of a sudden decide that they're going to have Tremaine Brock, who's relatively new to the system, or Shaquille Griffin start opposite Richard Sherman, or obviously play a lot of downs, they're not going to have to defend for quite as long as they would have to otherwise. And I think it was a big issue for them last year, not getting that interior pressure.
Certainly, and as valuable as the edge rush is, you also need that interior pressure to prevent the quarterback from being able to step up in the pocket. And I think oftentimes that's in many ways more disruptive than pressure from the edge.
Man, the Seahawks love these huge trades.
They do. It's kind of out of character with the rest of what they do, but every once in a while they're just going to spring these huge trades. So we should talk about what the Seahawks gave up here, because it is considerable. They, you know,
before you say that, I was going to say that we were talking earlier about making one of these big trades, and for a lot of positions, I don't think it would necessarily make sense happening the day after the last preseason game, where he's going to get, what, 8 practices in with the team. He's not going to get
that many practices
before he's actually on the field playing a real game in Green Bay trying to sack Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting when you put it that way. I mean, I don't think they'll practice until at least Sunday as they go through this cutdown. So you're going to have significantly less than 8 practices, I think, under his belt. And you're right. Yeah, I mean, I think the position we specifically were contrasting this to is obviously there is always a lot of excitement among Seahawks fans about the idea of them trying to trade for a left tackle or any offensive lineman. And given the importance of continuity at that position, it's a really tough spot to integrate someone on the fly.
Yes. Offensive line is only as good as its weakest part, right? Because somebody can break through to the weakest part. Defensive line, all you need is one to get through there to really make a difference.
All right, so let's talk.
So anyway, what did the Seahawks give up?
So besides
a little bit sad, a little bit beside myself. I'm excited, but a little bit sad. What did the Seahawks give up?
It's bittersweet. Yeah, the Seahawks give up Jermaine Kearse in this trade after the report earlier this week from Diana Rossini of ESPN that they were shopping him. So this is a tough day for Kearse Crew, of which I consider myself
Pour one out. Are you pouring one at home?
It's just water, but yes, I am pouring one. But more significantly in terms of a resource standpoint, they give up next year's second round pick and then also swap seventh round picks with the Jets, which should certainly result in moving up in the seventh round, but not significant enough to offset the loss of the second rounder. So, you know, I think if you would have asked me coming in today, I would have thought that it would take your first round pick maybe to get a player of this caliber. Then John Clayton got our hopes up by indicating that he thought that Richardson might be available for a fourth round pick.
Yes, which would have been a heist.
Yeah, I'm so in on that one. A second rounder obviously falls somewhere in between those two extremes. It's not as much as the Seahawks gave up to get Percy Harvin and Jimmy Graham, but it is still an important resource for them. And here's my standpoint on this trade.
Yes.
From a big picture sense, I think what this trade says to me is that the Seahawks are all in on 2017 because of the fact that they're concerned about the long-term future of the Legion of Boom.
Okay.
So obviously we saw the Richard Sherman trade talks last year, saw them draft all the safeties who are not at this point anywhere near being able to supplant Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas at those positions, but it may be the last year of the Legion of Boom as we know it. And I think the Seahawks really want to maximize their ability to compete while they've got that group together.
No, I guess we should appreciate the LOB while we have them.
We should always appreciate, appreciate everything about the Seahawks run while it's going on. But I think that's part of why there was the urgency for them to give up a second round pick to, and then also make this move with Doug Baldwin that puts more money on their cap in future years, which is interesting. Because they'll have to try to re-sign Sheldon Richardson. So
yeah. So what does this mean cap-wise, this trade?
So he is currently in the fifth-year option of his rookie contract after being drafted by the Jets in 2013, and he'll make $8 million this year. It is all base salary. There's no signing bonus whatsoever, and then become an unrestricted free agent after this season.
Man, they're gonna have so many people to sign this offseason.
So, yeah, he adds to, you know, they've really prioritized one-year deals in free agency, Jimmy Graham going into the last year of his deal, and now Richardson as well. So if they were to franchise him to try to ensure retaining him, that would be $13.5 million as a defensive tackle.
Okay.
So, and that would give you then the leverage to potentially try to negotiate a long-term deal with Richardson. But, you know, you're certainly not getting a bargain here with him outside of perhaps this 1 year.
Yes.
And that's the point that our loyal listener Ben B has been making on Twitter, is that, you know, usually these kind of trades, well, you get a better talent. Okay. Well, usually you get a far better talent than you can realistically expect to get in a second round. You're not getting necessarily the same kind of net value that you do with those players because they're on these team-friendly rookie contracts for several years. So that's kind of the long-term
hit. There'll be even more pressure on the Seahawks to trade that first-round pick for a second and fourth next year.
Yes, perhaps so. I mean, we should expect that no matter what. But it'll be interesting to see who they prioritize, what they do with the franchise tag, because obviously that's a consideration with Jimmy Graham as well. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions here about what this means in the long term.
Well, it's kind of funny that this trade that happens right before the season made us realize that this might be the last off season. This might be the last season that we go into the season expecting the Seahawks to probably look pretty similar the following year. But all that said, there's somebody who's been with us for this entire Pete Carroll run and has been close to our hearts as a Husky grad, somebody who's from the Seattle area, I think from Tacoma, and that's losing Jermaine Kearse. So what does it mean both emotionally and then also to the wide receiving core?
This is a tough one, man. Not just the entire, you know, you talked about I think it's more the Russell Wilson era than the Pete Carroll era, but, and he's from Lakewood, so save your tweets. That's a separate city than Tacoma, although nearby. But really, very specifically, the Pelton cast year.
Yes.
The first year, half year of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, 2013, the year the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, we had sponsored Jermaine Kearse's Pro Football Reference page. And we're really counting on that to pay off when he caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl, as you Nostra Tristan predicted before that game.
And an amazing touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Well, no, it didn't pay off at all. Almost no one clicked on that Pro Football Reference link. Apparently, anyone who was going to look up Jermaine Kearse was not interested in our podcast, which is understandable.
Paid off because he scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl, though.
It did. I mean, when you think about the most important catches in Seahawks franchise history, Jermaine Kearse has a heavy majority of them. I mean, the game-winning touchdowns in both NFC Championship games that the Seahawks won in the Pete Carroll era, including a walk-off touchdown in overtime against the Panthers to cap that comeback in 2014 or 2015, but the 2014 season. And then also, obviously, the play that, had things gone differently, we would have looked back on is the turning point of the Super Bowl with that catch against New England, amazing catch.
You meant the Packers, right? The touchdown, not the Panthers.
Did I say the Panthers? Yes, I obviously meant the Packers.
Packers in the NFC Championship game. I just got goosebumps picturing myself being at that game, seeing Kearse make that catch, and realizing that we were going to the Super Bowl after that game.
I mean, yeah. And then also just the story of an undrafted rookie who had kind of a disappointing senior year at UW, if I recall correctly. That was the year he really struggled with drops, right? Who worked through that to at times be an extraordinarily effective wide receiver for the Seahawks. And, you know, there's obviously been a lot of debate about Jermaine Kearse in the last year here. We're sadly going to have to retire the Kearse space on the on Ben B's bingo board.
We're still following him.
Yeah, we'll have weekly updates on how he does with the Jets. Which, let me tell you, I don't think his DVOA is going to be very good this year with the New York Jets. But, you know, a lot of the conversation about that, even the pro-Kearse conversation from people like Bob Condotta on Twitter, you know, kind of defending the idea of keeping him, and what the Seahawks are losing is focused on his durability and that aspect of it, because of the fact that the Seahawks young receivers, Paul Richards and Tyler Lockett, have tended to struggle with injuries. But I think that undersells what he did as an actual football player at times that were not 2016 and not 2014. I guess just odd numbered years.
Well, there's more to the argument, too, that not even just the great plays that he made in the previous seasons, but also his understanding of the scheme, his ability to block within the scheme, his ability to improvise and kind of know where Russell Wilson is going to be. I mean, we saw him even last year. It didn't really work out so successfully, but kind of still being kind of a safety net for Russell. You know, he looked for Jermaine Kearse when plays broke down.
So in 2013, he had a plus 26.2% DVOA. Did not have enough targets that year, 38 targets, on which he averaged 15.7 yards per catch to qualify for the Football Outsider leaders. Then dropped to below average in 2014, minus 9.1%. Bounces back in 2015 to rank fifth in the NFL with a 29.8% DVOA, catching 72% of his passes that season, which is noted also was third on the Seahawks that season because of the fact that Tyler Lockett and Doug Baldwin was number one in the NFL that year. Tyler Lockett, I'm not sure if he had enough catches to qualify. Yeah, he did. He was third. So the passing attack was really great in 2015. I mean, the idea that the Seahawks can be effective throwing the ball to Jermaine Kearse was not a crazy one. But as you've mentioned in the past, the emergence of Kason Williams, obviously a big factor, and I think the feeling that Kearse, you know, along with the disappointing 2016, where, you know, those stats dropped to minus 28.7% DVOA, almost as bad as he was good in 2015, and 46% catch rate. But Kason Williams also opened the door to this move.
It's kind of a husky on husky violence here. But I have to say, before we're done talking at Kearse, and talk for a second about Kason, before there was Tanner McAvoy, before there was Kason Williams, he was, I think, the first wide receiver of the Pete Carroll, maybe the Russell Wilson era, who we really embraced this underdog story. I mean, there was Doug Baldwin, but we cheered for Kearse like we have never cheered for anybody else. When he made the roster, we were excited about it. When he emerged as a starter, we were excited about it. And then when he scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl, it paid off every single bit of that, right? But now we move to somebody, and granted, the spot's not going to be equal, but move to somebody like Kason Williams, who you have to think about as a story unto himself, being a player who was so highly recruited coming out of high school, stays home and goes to UW, is a productive receiver, has a terrible injury at UW, right? He's somebody who, if that doesn't happen, we're looking at Kasen Williams as somebody who was drafted in the first three rounds, right?
Yep.
And now, over this time period, has worked his way back, stayed with it, been on the practice squad, worked his way back, and sees himself in the position now to have seized the job during training camp. And unfortunately, looks like one of the people who's pushed Jermaine Kearse out, but somebody who's going to be taking a bigger role as another undrafted Husky starting, or at least playing significant snaps on the Seahawks team. It's kind of amazing.
It's a fascinating tradition for the Seahawks to be developing here. And I look forward to it happening with, I don't know, Dante Pettis at some point.
Pettis is coming. Chico McClatcher.
All right. Anything else to say about this trade, or, you know, what we're looking for before final roster cuts come down tomorrow morning?
How do you feel just generally overall about the trade? Do you feel generally positive? I guess that was, if you were to Kevin Pelton trade grades.
Oh, that's a great question.
I thought about that. Wasting the opportunity, a professional trade grader, as I understand. What do you give this trade?
I think it's
on the spot here.
It's somewhere in the B-C+ range to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought you were going to say it was better than that.
I mean, we should finish here with a personal story, which is
okay.
When the Seahawks traded for Dion Branch, I think that was into the season, correct?
Maybe week one had happened, yeah.
I think week one had happened. But we were so excited about that trade. The Seahawks are coming off of a Super Bowl appearance the previous year that every time we greeted each other for several weeks after that, it wasn't hello, it was Dion Branch.
Yes.
And we saw in hindsight, obviously, they gave up a first-round pick in that trade, a better pick, how poorly that trade ended up working out in the long run.
I'm going to say that I don't think this is a Dion Branch type situation.
You don't think so?
In Dion Branch, we were looking for a savior. We realized that
went to the Super Bowl the previous year.
But we realized that the team was probably going to regress.
Yes.
And we're not going to be greeting each other as Sheldon Richardson. Like, if Sheldon Richardson is bad, legitimately bad, this team will still most likely make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they made the playoffs in 2006, too, despite injuries to Matt Hasselbeck and Sean Alexander that season, right?
And also, defensive linemen, I think, are a little bit less reliant on, you know, getting passes and getting integrated into the system as somebody like Dion Branch was.
That's a good point. But
I'm not as worried about this being Dion Branch territory. If I were to justify that trade, I would say your trade grade of B-C+ is that they're giving up a second-round pick for 1 year of Sheldon Richardson.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd just say I'm wary. I'm hopeful, but I'm wary at this point. Is that fair?
Yeah, it could mean that on the field they're better this year, but long-term it could affect the Seahawks' assets. It will affect the Seahawks' assets long-term and ability to be flexible.
But sometimes you do need to be aggressive and go out there and make win-now moves, you know, while your players are in their prime. And if it does end up being the difference that tips the Seahawks over in terms of what they accomplish in the playoffs, then, you know, I think they'll be happy to give up the second-round pick.
All right. Well, I think we should end in in tribute to our greeting each other as Dion Branch. I think we should leave each other with a Jermaine Kearse.
Jermaine Kearse.
Jermaine Kearse.
Thanks for listening.